So church, how are we doing? Where are we going? How are we going to get there? There are all those big picture sort of questions that we're used to asking when we think about vision and direction and purpose. They're questions that are not always easy to answer, and certainly not when we've come through a massive disruption. Sometimes at FEC, especially in our staff team, we talk a lot about going off the map, which is simply a metaphor for venturing into new ideas, new spaces and places, and discover what God might have for us there. Sometimes we get a little pompous, I think, and talk about R&D, research and development, as though it's all up to us. Not quite. But here is the reality that we do think about so often. We are far more afraid of missing opportunities than we are of making mistakes. Far more afraid of missing an opportunity than making a mistake. And this journey that we've been on, it's a wild ride at times, and I do love it. But the honest truth about where we find ourselves now is not simply about going off the map or the fact we have no map, no direction where to go in the future. The reality is we don't even have a compass anymore. We're not sure where we are, let alone where we're going. Life has been complicated. Everything, personally, or whether it's to do with us as a community, feels a little obscure. And so with that in mind, I want to introduce you to a guy, an amazing guy that we read about in the Old Testament, the first half of our Bible. His name is Elisha, and he's a prophet. I think it's a story that we really need to hear today and pay attention to. Most of it's found in the second book of Kings, which if you're not sure where that is and you want to go looking, if you have a phone, you can type it in. If you have a hard copy, you're about this far into your Bible. And you'll rough guess. There's 1 and 2 Samuel, 1 and 2 Kings, 1 and 2 Chronicles. We're in the middle of all that. First and Second Kings. We're going to pick it up in chapter 2. And as we listen together, I want you to pay attention for signs of God's presence. This older prophet, Elijah, you may have heard of him, his time is almost up. He's the guy that called down fire from heaven. He's the guy that could raise somebody from the dead. He's the guy that ran faster than the king with his horses and chariot to get away from the storm that was coming. And Elisha, this younger man, is his chosen successor. Now, you got to be careful with the names here. One's Elijah, one's Elisha. It's the same confusion we have in my family. My great-grandfather was called John. My grandfather was called James. My father's called John. I'm called James. My son is called John. If they have a baby boy, they're going to call him James. It's like nobody knows who anybody is. We all just respond to any word that begins with J. These guys begin with the letter E. Chapter 2, beginning in verse 6. Elijah said to him, "Stay here, for the Lord has sent me to the Jordan." But he said, "As the Lord lives and as you yourself live, I will not leave you." So the two of them went on. 50 men of the company of prophets also went and stood at some distance from them as they were both standing by the Jordan. Then Elijah took his mantle, his cloak, and rolled it up and struck the water. The water was parted to the one side and to the other, and the two of them crossed on dry ground. When they had crossed, Elijah said to Elisha, "Tell me what I may do for you before I am taken from you." Elisha said, "Please let me inherit a double portion, a double share of your spirit." These two guys have been on a long journey for a while. They're going from one place to another. Elijah is actually trying to leave the younger guy behind because he just wants to go away, and he knows he's going to be with God. God is going to take him. And the younger prophet, Elisha, flat out refuses to leave him. "As the Lord lives, and as I live, as you live, I'm not leaving you." This is a story that's been repeated several times as you begin reading this book of 2 Kings, until at last the older prophet realizes why his young protege won't leave him. He still needs something. He still wants something from his master. One day, way back in the first book of Kings in chapter 19, the old prophet Elijah is walking around and he sees this young man, Elisha. He's working on his parents' farm. He's plowing the field. And he walks up to him and gets a kind of his prophet's cloak, I guess like a professor's robe, something like that, wraps it around the young guy and tells him to come and be his disciple, his apprentice. And the young man just up and leaves his family, leaves his job, takes off, and follows without a question. He couldn't really have understood all that was going on. But the one thing that amazes me is that Elijah sees this young man and he sees something in him. He sees some potential in him that nobody has ever recognized before. And he calls him there and then to follow and enter a whole new set of ways of being. And now at this point in time, the younger man, Elisha, is asking a big question. This really reminds me a little bit of Jesus and his friends. Jesus is walking past the Sea of Galilee, we read in Matthew chapter 4. And he saw two brothers, Simon, who's called Peter, and his brother Andrew, and they're casting a net into the sea, for they were fishers. And he said to them, "Follow me, and I'll make you fishers of people." And immediately, they left their nets and followed him. They left their business, they left their family, and just followed Jesus. No questions, nobody knew what was going on, they just did. And it's like this, Elisha has the courage to follow this call, even when he's not sure where it's going. But at the end here, he really has a weird request when you think about it, that he wants a double share of the spirit of Elijah. It's almost as though he's saying, "I want to be devoted to God as fully as you are. I want to give my life to serving people the way you have done all of your life." He says, "I want to share in your legacy. The same spirit that lives in you, I want the spirit of God to live in me and use me." And as you read on in chapter 2, Elijah, the older prophet, is taken off into the sky in this fiery chariot. And he drops his cloak and Elisha grabs it. And he heads back to the river. And here's what we read in verse 14. He took the mantle, the cloak of Elijah that had fallen from him and struck the water. He said, "Where is the Lord, the God of Elijah? Where is he?" He struck the water again. And the water parted to one side and to the other. And Elisha crossed over. He had no intentions of going back across that river again, back to the land where God had called him to serve, unless the Spirit of God was going with him, because he knew his call was to continue his predecessor's ministry. And what's this got to do with us? Well, what was Jesus' commission to us? What is our calling? What is God asking of us? And Jesus said before he was taken to heaven, "All authority in heaven and earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to obey everything that I have commanded you. And remember that I'm with you always, even to the very end of the age." Calling requires presence. Calling requires presence. It's all about God's presence, the presence of Jesus with his people always and to the end. And it's because of this calling, because of the presence of God with us, that we press on. It's because of this call. You already saw one of the need to knows that we can translate our website into multiple languages to serve our very diverse community. It's because of this call that we have become a multilingual church, launching FEC en Español 2 weekends ago with 212 people at our very first service. It's because of this call that in this past ministry year, we helped bring and settle 62 refugees here in Alberta. It's because of this call, it's because of the presence of Jesus that we press on no matter how difficult things become, because calling requires presence. I want you to jump to chapter 4 with me because there's some really great stories here in this part of our Bible. Chapter 4, and as we read together, keep your eyes peeled or listen carefully for God's provision. Because the God who is with us, whose presence goes with us, is the God who provides. Chapter 4, verse 1. Now the wife of a member of the company of prophets cried to Elisha, "Your servant, my husband, is dead. And you know that your servant feared the Lord, but a creditor has come to take my two children as slaves." Elisha said to her, "What shall I do for you? Tell me, what do you have in the house?" And she answered, "Your servant has nothing in the house except a jar of oil." He said, "Go outside, borrow vessels from all your neighbors, empty vessels, and not just a few. Then go in, shut the door behind you and your children, and start pouring into all these vessels. When each is full, set it aside." So she left him and shut the door behind her and her children, and they kept bringing vessels to her, and she kept pouring. This poor woman's in trouble. She's desperate. Her husband's died, she's run out of money, their debts have been acquired, the children are going to be used as indentured servants to pay off the debt. She's desperate. But did you notice that in her desperation, she's not blaming God? And she doesn't run away and hide from God either. or get real upset with him or somebody else. She actively runs toward God. She seeks his help. She reaches out to the guy who represents God to her, this prophet Elisha, and asks him to intervene. And he asks her, what do you want me to do? What do you think I can do? That reminds me of a Jesus story. It's a story we find in Mark chapter 10. Jesus and his friends, they came to Jericho. And as he and his disciples and a large crowd were leaving Jericho, Bartimaeus, the son of Timaeus, a blind beggar, was sitting by the roadside. When he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to shout and say, Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me. Many sternly ordered him to be quiet, but he cried out all the more loudly, son of David, have mercy on me. Jesus stood still and said, call him here. And so they called the blind man, saying to him, take heart, get up, he's calling you. And so throwing off his cloak, he sprang up and came to Jesus. And Jesus said to him, what do you want me to do for you? The blind man said to him, my teacher, let me see again. And Jesus said to him, then go, your faith has made you well. And immediately he regained his sight and followed Jesus on the way. Jesus notices this guy in the margins. He's pushed to the side. He's not important. Nobody really has any need of him. But Jesus asks him, what do you want? And then everything changes as the blind man received what he needed most. And Elisha asks this poor lady that nobody's got any time for either, what do you want? He even asks her, what have you got? And it's not much. A little jar of olive oil. Olive oil was valuable in the ancient world. You could use it for what we do. We can cook with it. They used it in their lamps. They didn't have candles, really, but they had lamps. They used it to do that. They used it as a moisturizer because you couldn't go to Bath and Body Works to get anything. They used it to keep their leather pliable. They used it to stop iron instruments from rusting. They used it in religious ceremonies and things like that. It was valuable. She didn't have much, just a little. And I am so thankful that we serve a God who specializes in doing a lot with a little. Elisha says, get all the jars you can find, all these vessels, ask everybody, get every conceivable bottle and jar you can find and bring them in. We're going to fill them because our God is a God of abundance. He's a God of abundance. One of the most amazing stories of this past year for us at FEC was the elimination of the debt on the Deerfoot campus. We'd set a goal several years ago of becoming debt-free by 2022, long before the pandemic. And regardless of all the restrictions and challenges that we face, regardless of our lack of sufficiency, God had everything we needed, and our debt is gone, fully retired and disappeared. There's no rich uncle. There's no endowment fund. We didn't win the lottery. It's just ordinary people like you and me who faithfully show up and bring what we have, trusting God to be our provider, because we discover that our insufficiency is always met by God's sufficiency. And it's because of God's sufficiency that we're debt-free. It's because of God's sufficiency that in the past year we could send $95,000 to help Ukrainian refugees that are settling in Poland. It's because of God's sufficiency that we continue to support and sponsor dozens of international workers around our world telling people about Jesus. It's because of God's sufficiency that we've been able to launch a great new mental health ministry this past year called Renewing Hope. Because God always provides. He's a God of abundance. He just asks you and me to be faithful. Elisha's story keeps going. We got to keep moving with him. We're going to jump to chapter 5. And this time I want you to look for how God's people get involved. Chapter 5, verse 1. Because God's using anybody. Here's what we read. Naaman, the commander of the army of the king of Aram, was a great man and in high favor with his master, because by him the Lord had given victory to Aram. The man, though a mighty warrior, suffered from a skin disease. Now the Arameans, in one of their raids, had taken a young girl captive from the land of Israel. She served Naaman's wife. She said to her mistress, if only my Lord were with the prophet who is in Samaria, he would cure him of his skin disease. So Naaman went in and told his lord, the king, just what the girl from the land of Israel had said. And the king of Aram said, "Go then, and I'll send along a letter to the king of Israel." He went, taking with him 10 talents of silver, 6,000 shekels of gold, and 10 sets of garments. That's a lot of stuff. There's real important people in this story. A couple of kings, a general, a prophet. But I want you to keep looking and pay attention as we go. Naaman's actually an outsider from Israel. He's not part of the people that God chose to bear his name and shine his light in the world. He's from Aram, what we would probably call today southern Syria. And he had it all, really. Naaman had climbed to the hierarchy of the military structure. He'd got to the top. He was supreme commander. He's a 5-star general, if you like. He's highly regarded by everybody, including the king, position, prestige, power. He's got it. He's a popular guy, but he also has a problem. At the tail end of verse 1, we read the phrase, "The man, though a mighty warrior, suffered from a skin disease." Or as another translation would put it, you might be familiar with, "but he had leprosy." I was really tempted to ask you what the "but" is in your life, but I thought you might get in the wrong end of everything I'm trying to say. So let me ask it like this instead. What is the one thing in your life that casts a shadow over everything else? What is the one thing in your life that casts a shadow over everything else? What's the obstacle in your path? What's the problem that won't go away? What's the issue you can't solve? The fight you always lose? What's the challenge that's just too big for you? In the Bible, leprosy doesn't actually refer to Hansen's disease that dulls and has nerve problems with people, and then they begin to damage their own limbs because they can't feel what's going on. In Scripture, it's a catch-all word for all sorts of skin ailments, because in general, people in ancient cultures were really nervous, especially in the Middle East. They were really nervous about skin problems. It kind of seems odd to us because we're all moisturizing all day long just to try and keep our skin in Alberta. But for these people, most scholars think the problem was that when you had flakes and skin in your hand or dandruff in your hair or something like that, it looked to them as though the body was beginning to decompose, as though you were already dying. And they were terrified of it. Naaman had a problem. What's yours? While you're pondering your answer, I want you to come on a journey with Naaman and me. It started out with him hearing some bad news, but now he's going to hear some good news. Who's the other person in this story? 2 kings, a general and a prophet, and there's a nameless young girl, kidnapped, prisoner of war. Maybe her parents have already been killed. A young woman with no status, but she has good news. She has hope. She is one of God's people. She doesn't seem to be very resentful about the way her life has turned out or bitter about being forced to serve these people. Instead, she chooses to help her master because this young lady had faith in God. And she knew there was a prophet in Israel, a person who represented God who could help. And that's why I want you to pay close attention to this story with me this morning, because today could be a good news day for you too. There is hope. There's hope for you. Naaman begins another journey. He goes to see the king, who apparently takes care of out-of-country healthcare premiums. And the king sends him off with all this money he can find to go and visit the people in Israel. He sends him to the one person he assumes can do something, the king of Israel. Surely the king would know what to do, or he'd know who to put him in contact with. And Naaman goes along to do this. But the king of Israel, he's not at all happy about this. He just sees this as a pretext for war. You send me a sick guy and a whole load of money and tell me to make him better? How on earth can I do that? And if I don't make him better, I know what happens next. You're going to come and invade and say it's all my problem. The king is really worked up about the whole thing. And do you notice how Naaman's responding and dealing with all this? He's sent along with all this stuff as though he's going to try and make a bargain with God. Look at this. I got all this money, all these clothes, all this stuff. I'll give this to you. You do something for me. Because after all, he's a somebody. He's significant and important. You ever tried that with God? Just kind of let him know who you are in case he's forgotten. Didn't read the name tag. Hey, I do all this stuff for you, God. I'm always volunteering. I give you lots of money, God. Now they're out of debt and it's cost me a lot. I've believed in you for a long time. I pray and I read my Bible. Hey, listen up. It's me calling God. I don't ask for much, but today I am. Chapter 5, verse 9 begins like this. So Naaman came. Where am I? It is verse 9. Get it right. Naaman came with his horses and chariots and halted at the entrance of Elisha's house. Elisha sent a messenger to him saying, go and wash in the Jordan 7 times and your flesh shall be restored and you shall be clean. I thought he would surely come out, said Naaman. He's angry. I thought he would come out and stand and call in the name of the Lord of his God, that he'd wave his hand over the spot and cure the disease. Are not the Abana and the Pharpar, the rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? Could I not wash in them and be clean? He turned and went away in a rage, but his servants approached and said to him, Father, if the prophet had commanded you to do something difficult, would you not have done it? Huh. How much more, when all he asked you to do was wash and be clean? So he went down and immersed himself 7 times in the Jordan, according to the word of the man of God. His flesh was restored like that of a young boy, and he was clean. That's fascinating. Naaman arrives, if you like, with his limousines and his motorcade. And what does the great prophet do? He insults him. Doesn't even get out of the door, out of his chair and go to the door. He sends a servant. One of the most important people in the whole of the ancient world shows up at the door, and Elisha can't be bothered to get up out of his chair because he's too busy watching Netflix. And the instructions that he sends are even worse for lack of courtesy. Essentially, Elisha's passing on this message. Hey, you know what? There's this really dirty, stinky river just down the road. You can't miss it because you'll smell it before you get there. It's like a sewage canal. Go jump in it and duck yourself in 7 times. It'll be great. What's that about? Pride? That's what's going on. Yeah, Naaman is sick. Nobody needs to remind him of that. He's got this skin problem that needs to get sorted out. It's impacting his life. But it's impacting his life in ways that he doesn't really begin to understand. And just as God is willing and able to cure the physical condition, God is ready and willing to cure something that's going on in his heart. God wants him to be whole again in every aspect of his life. And it all happens because one of God's people, a little girl, a significant, insignificant little person, it would seem in their world, a prisoner of war, a slave, an orphan, she courageously steps up and says something. What's God prompting you to do? What is God prompting you to do? God's people provided almost 15,000 lunches this past year for kids facing insecurity. And if you read the news this week, you'll have discovered that Alberta has the highest rates of food insecurity in our entire nation. God's people stepped up to change oil in cars for single moms, providing care packages for people in need, getting ready fresh produce that could go to families. And get this, 85 of God's brand new people were baptized this past year. It's amazing what God's people get up to. One more incident. We're going to look in chapter 6. This time looking for God's protection. This is a cool story. I always get goosebumps when I read it. 2 Kings chapter 6 begins at verse 8. Once when the king of Aram was at war with Israel, he took counsel with all his officers. He said, at such and such a place shall be my camp. But the man of God sent word to the king of Israel saying, take care not to pass this place, for the Arameans are going down there. The king of Israel sent word to the place of which the man of God spoke. More than once or twice, he warned a place so that it was on the alert. The mind of the king of Aram was greatly perturbed because of this. He called his officers and said to them, now tell me, who among us is betraying us to the king of Israel? One of his officers said, no one, my lord king. It's Elisha, the prophet in Israel, who tells the king of Israel the words that you speak in your bedchamber. He said to him, go and find where he is. I will send and seize him. He was told, he's in Dothan. And so the king sent horses and chariots there and a great army. They came by night and surrounded the city. When an attendant of the man of God rose early in the morning and went out, the army with horses and chariots was all around the city. And his servant said, "Alas, master, what shall we do?" That's kind of Bible speak for something that you can't say in church, but you get the idea. He replied, the prophet did, "Don't be afraid, for they're more of with us than are with them." Then Elisha prayed, "Oh Lord, please open his eyes that he may see." So the Lord opened the eyes of the servant, and he saw the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. It's quite funny, really, the story. This breach in military intelligence, a security leak, the king is furious, he gets an investigation underway, and once he discovers the problem is the prophet in another country, he's determined to deal with him once and for all. A snatch team is sent to grab Elisha. And the story is really all about seeing. Elisha's friend, his accomplice, his servant, can only see the things that are right in front of him. He can only see what's really there, and he sees that a big army has showed up overnight, and they're in a whole load of trouble. Elisha, he sees a lot more. He sees way more, and he's not in the least concerned about any of this. He knows that God is with him and that he lives with God's protection. And so he prays that his servant's eyes would be open to recognize the spiritual realities of what's going on round about him so that he could see what Elisha sees, that the divine army is already there. There are more with us than there are with them. In 1 John chapter 4, we read this. The one who is in you is greater than the one who is in the world. The one who's in you is greater than the one who's in the world because God himself is present with Jesus. And yet so often, we don't see him. God is speaking to us through his word. And yet so often, we don't hear him. The issues that we confront in life that seem so overwhelming, they make us feel small and weak and scared. But when we live under God's protection, that's way different. We need to pray for open eyes. This past couple of years has been way more than challenging for us as a church family. And yet God has protected his church. Our Southwest campus is up and running, meeting on Sundays at Glenmore Christian Academy and during the week at our ministry center and offices just across the street. Our online campus continues to serve hundreds of people each week, not just in Calgary, but around the world. Many of you have sometimes seen them broadcasting out of Meeting Place One. We've even had online participants fly here to be part of some special things that were going on. Our Deerfoot campus right now, you notice, is filling up rapidly on Sunday mornings. We're going to have to make some choices at some point. But I'm praying for us that God would open up our eyes to see how his presence is with us, that his provision is more than enough, that his people are impacting the lives of others, and that God himself is protecting his church. So what is next? Where are we going? What are we doing? This year, more than simply dreaming and planning for the future, I think the reality is we need to learn how to respond in the present, right now, to what's happening. What might that look like for you? I believe God's calling each one of us, and that means you, to go deeper. And so I want to ask you the question, really. What are the choices that you will make this year to go deeper with Jesus, to grow in your faith? What will you do to go deeper? We're going to provide some teaching series for you on learning to pray with Jesus and developing some healthy spiritual rhythms in your life in the new year. We will continue to invest in Alpha and Right Now Media that you heard about and all sorts of grow opportunities for you to deepen your faith. And sometimes it's surprising how we grow. Listen to this letter. I want to thank you for your warm welcome in the Harvest Kitchen. That's our food ministry here at FEC. It was a great experience working with all of you. I had volunteered in the past, but this time it impacted me so much personally and spiritually. I'm going through a difficult time facing many challenges, and when I was invited to be part of the taco stand, I accepted thinking it's just extra hands. When I came on Saturday, Sterling gave assigned tasks for everyone and gave us complete freedom to organize our stand, serve, and decorate. The open feedback and suggestions made me feel confident and excited. I felt a spark in me because I was going to put into practice skills I'd learned at hospitality school, skills that I'd used when working in catering a long time ago. The fact that you guys trusted me, listened to my opinions, gave me and the team freedom to manage our stand, that impacted me in such a positive way. You made me feel useful, valued, worthy, important, capable of getting the job done, and it meant all the world to me. People like you are helping me build my life back with confidence. FEC has given me so much hope that there are good people everywhere, that I'm seen and loved and useful. For so many years, I've been told I'm not good enough, that I was a bad person with a rotten heart. But God heard my prayers, keeping me safe, and sent amazing people into my life. He's working in me, and I feel him every single day in my life. Go deeper. And we're invited to move closer, not just in the auditorium, but kind of the number squeeze that happens too, but to move closer in the sense of doing life together. I know full well it's been hard to have as much contact with one another in the past couple of years as we would like or we're used to. But I would love for that to change. And I don't mean because we're nervous because of somebody coughing and giving us a disease. The bigger reality is that we've learned how to do life just all by ourselves and becoming very lonely people. I want that to change. We talk often at FEC about moving from rows into circles, from rows in big rooms like this into circles in homes or other places. It could be a small group. It could be through our men or women's ministry. It could be through one of the massive support groups that we have here that are serving and helping so many people. It could even be through serving others. I want you to watch this with me.
I have found that volunteering at FEC is a real blessing for myself. Whether I'm ushering in the church, the auditorium, walking people, or patrolling the parking lot to make sure that the vehicles stay safe, it gives me a chance to interact with people, say, hi, how are you doing? Welcome to the service. And you never know where those relationships are going to go, but they start with a hello.
When I bring food to the people at their table, I say, here's your food, and they have this really happy expression on their face, and it gives me joy, and it really makes me keep on serving.
Being a member of FSC has been a great blessing to my family and I. My husband and I got baptized on the same day in FSC, and we've met like really amazing families in here as well, so we feel greatly blessed and happy.
Go deeper, move closer, and reach further. We all have good news to share, and we want to be able to equip each one of us to do that, to actually have the courage and the wherewithal to tell and talk about the story of Jesus. We're actively pursuing a number of partnership opportunities right now, some of which will equip ordinary people just like us to be able to share the story of Jesus in ordinary ways that don't make us weird, but actually communicate well. We're working on partnership opportunities to expand our reach on the east side of Calgary this coming year. We're looking at the possibility and options of fostering church congregations that don't have the depth of resources that are available to us. And just like we've birthed some children in little campuses or congregations around our city, what would that mean to foster another church family? We're even looking at launching a preschool here in the Deerfoot campus. But what really will the year look like, the year ahead, as we recalibrate, as we move forward? I hope and pray that for you, it means that you will go deeper, that you'll become spiritually strong. I pray that you'll move closer, that you'll become spiritually and socially more connected to other people than you have been. I pray that you'll reach further, and together that we will be missionally engaged. Maybe there is no map. Perhaps there's no compass. But we have Jesus. So let's run with perseverance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith. FEC, we have Jesus.